What is up, everyone? Welcome to Plastic Cards Podcast, where we break down the video game news of the week. I already screwed it up, James. That's great. Thank you for joining me. We have a very special guest. We got James from the Circle and Square podcast. I really appreciate you being on the show. How are you doing, James?
I'm doing fantastic, man. Don't even worry about messing up that intro. I didn't even notice. I mean, that's the life of what we do here as podcasters, right? But yeah, no, thanks for having me. You invited me. I think it was last week we were chatting a bit, and I was super excited to get the invite. And, you know, I was checking out your guys' content. I love the green screen stuff that you guys do. Like, it's super cool to see you guys on the couch, like with the video behind. It's super unique. So you know what? I was not going to say no to the invite. And thanks a lot for having me on.
I appreciate it. I dig your, you know, corner of the wall thing you got going on. Maybe you're behind a Starbucks or something plugged in. I appreciate your background too.
Yeah. You know what? I just moved like a couple months ago, right? And so we've been going through that whole setting up the new house type of deal. And I got this desk kind of set up, and trust me, like, it's really efficient on the in front of me side, but behind me, I got to get the decoration still going. But you know, a couple of weeks ago, at least on my show, I didn't even have a plug cover on there. So at least I've upgraded, you know, for now.
Yeah. It's funny where it's like, sometimes I spend, I think, too much time like thinking about how important a background is. Like, I've gone through that over the years of, oh, I got to have school stuff going on, or switching the green screen. And then I'll follow like these other big podcasters. It's just like exactly what you have up. They're just kind of like chilling. So I think at a certain point, it's like, it matters more like what you're doing, saying, than getting caught up. I can have a cool, the best background in the world, but if I suck, which I do, it doesn't matter then.
Well, that's the thing, right? And you're smart because you got the green screen going on. Like, you can literally have whatever you want. And for me, it's like, you know, I'm never going to compete with those dudes that have like the huge wall of like all these collectibles and stuff. I just can't compete with that, you know? So why not just keep it simple? I got my like my cork board and just black and white, you know, I can put up whatever I want. It's all good.
Yeah, for sure. That's kind of where I'm going to go with. I'm just going to be outside in the yard, just podcasting. They were talking about people in the Starbucks podcasting in the lobby. Yeah, that's where it's going.
Exactly. It's like every episode you just aim to top exactly what you did last time.
Right. You try. Yeah.
You, next time you should use the green screen and sit like with my wall behind you.
That'd be so meta. And yeah, I'm going to do that now for sure. I'm just going to try and troll different podcasters and just have their background and maybe not get sued, but we'll try. All righty, James. Well, I want to transition to the show here. I really appreciate you once again being on. So you can catch James on the Circle and Square podcast. You guys are everywhere, pretty much, you know, Twitter, YouTube, anywhere you can download MP3s. You also have your co-host with you, Katie, and I have her Twitter pulled up here, at you.
It's Utopia. Yeah.
Utopia. There you go.
She's a big tea drinker. So I guess it's a play on words, right? She's like a lit student and a tea drinker. So there you go.
Nice. That's awesome. Well, give me a rundown on how you guys started the show, kind of the origin of Circle and Square.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, I guess the starting point would be that, for those that don't know, Katie's actually my sister. So we grew up together playing games right from being little kids. And so it's cool because we had that experience growing up. You know, we had an N64 and all that stuff, PlayStation 1. And we grew up and we really just played games together. That's what we did. And now it's kind of been the thing. Well, we're adults, right? We don't live together. But the podcast is kind of where we can still come together and we get to talk about the stuff we love. So that's kind of where it started from. And it's interesting because we used to play a lot of the same stuff, but now as we've gotten older and kind of moved apart, I've gotten way more into certain stuff like RPGs and all that, and she's way more into like the hardcore like Sekiro and Souls and some more of the RTS kind of stuff, fighting games. So it's kind of cool to have the difference of opinion and then still have some stuff like, you know, a lot of the PlayStation exclusives that we both love a lot, and that's why we mostly cover PlayStation on our show. Although we talk about everything, I mean, Kate plays a lot on computer and I have Xbox and Switch and everything. So we're all over the place, but it's pretty much just a love of games and a reason for us to hang out and talk. So it's cool. And then we get to also meet other people like yourself and some other people on Twitter that I'm sure you guys who are in the Plastic Hearts community have seen pop up. So it's just it's a fun place to be and we love doing it. So it's just the fun, I think, that keeps us coming back.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear. Like especially with you growing up with Katie, like, you know, playing games and kind of where that changes like over time. I think of my sisters, I have two sisters as well, and we grew up just playing the same games, or they would kind of watch me play a lot of the time, and now they kind of dropped off, but they'll jump in every once in a while. But I always have this memory of me playing GTA like way too early. Like, I should never have been playing GTA, but
we all have that experience. Yeah,
exactly. It's like, somehow, you know, my parents are like, okay, I don't know what this is, but I was playing it. But I would do all the missions and stuff, but they just were cool with like driving the speed limit and going through the drive through like food stations and then just like parking their car at a house.
Yeah,
it was theirs. I just loved how they took a different route with playing that game, for sure.
It's so funny you mentioned that. That's like exactly what I tried to do with GTA when I was a kid. Like, I didn't really care for the whole missions. I think I was probably a bit young, right? I remember playing like Vice City or something, and I was I don't know, probably a few years too young to really understand, but all I knew is like, you know, cars and whatever's going on. And so I was like, oh, I wonder how well I can drive within the lines, and, you know, 5 minutes of that. And it's like, all of a sudden the cheat codes are way more fun. And you're just there like doing all the random shit you do in GTA. But yeah, it's funny.
It's also really hard to drive the speed limit and be within the lines. It's like, it's almost the game wants you to just be, you know, insane and just, you know, drive over people. It's like, it's hard to actually be a normal citizen in that game.
I think it's, I mean, it's pretty much impossible, right? They're pretty much just there to get hit by your car. So I think it's just one of those things that's like, that's the experience of GTA. And I mean, I'm speaking from only the PS2 really experience of GTA. I haven't played that for like years and years, so I'm not the right guy to ask about the new ones though.
Yeah, I understand, because I did get in on the hype of the last one, I want to say 5, which back when it came out, which is nuts to think back when it came out, because it's still like top of the chart selling.
It's crazy, man. It launched on PS3. Like, I just can't believe it. Like, the whole online infrastructure of that game, the way they kept it going, like, it's just something else. It, you know, people always talk about Fortnite and all those games as being so dominant. I guess GTA as well. But it's just, I think GTA gets lost of how impressive it is just because of its age.
Yeah, very true. And maybe because of, I don't know if it's like the subject matter or whatever, but they're able to just cram so much in this, you know, this open world. And they, the, you could criticize the story for sure, but like the newer stories are very much, you know, they're adult, but they're like on the same level as something you watch on Netflix or in a movie. It's like, it's all well casted and well written and, you know, parody of stuff, but like they maybe, I don't know if they don't get the praise, because they definitely do, but it's like, there is some serious, you know, awesome stuff to chew on with GTA. You could always just like make fun of how ridiculous it is. And it is. I like that it leans into that, but it's also, it can be, you know, it's pretty serious and it's a dope franchise. Like, I think it's there on the top of the selling list for a reason every month, whether I'm jumping in or not. Awesome. Okay. So we are back with James from the Circle and Square podcast. My house blew up somehow. So we lost power for a second. So that was great. But anyways, I was rambling on about GTA. It didn't matter either way.
Yeah, I mean, it gave us a nice segue, right? A nice segue opportunity.
That's all, dude. Every time we need a transition, just unplug the power.
Yeah, just pretend. Oh, another power outage. Okay, topic number two.
Yeah. It only takes, you know, 20 minutes of setup in between news stories. That's cool. All right, well, I got you on the line now, James, and I wanted to break down some of the news and stuff, and especially what you've been playing, which I know you've been playing Elden Ring, but I want to talk on some of the stuff that just happened recently, see if you have a take on it. One of the big recent things, at least last week, the review embargo lifted on the Steam Deck. Did you catch any of that online? Do you have an interest in the Steam Deck? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I did catch it. We just covered it actually on our last show as well, if you want to go check that out, anyone. But I guess, I mean, I'm not a Steam user, really. I mean, of course I have Steam. Who doesn't at this point if you're playing games? But I'm not, like, PC is probably my least played, you know, gaming arena, I guess you'd say. So Steam Deck to me was never something I was, you know, gonna jump at day one, but I really love the idea of it, just because, I mean, who doesn't have a million indie games on their Steam library, you know? And those are so perfect for handheld, and I've always liked handheld gaming, so I'm interested in a device kind of like it. But to me, it's kind of one of those things of like, do I really want to be the early adopter of this type of technology? And I feel like a lot of the reviews kind of confirmed my opinion on that. Not that it's a bad piece of hardware. Like, I think it does what people are wanting it to do based on what I've heard. But the 2 hour like maximum battery life is really kind of painful, I feel. And that's like, you know, people say the Switch doesn't have a great battery. And I agree, it's not like amazing if you compare it to some other handhelds, but it gets you through, right? But I feel 2 hours just isn't quite enough. And then there's the whole thing of like, not all the games are working on it right away. And of course, that'll get patched in. So it's not a huge deal, but it's just that those kind of bumps you go through, I guess, on like a new piece of tech launching. And so for those that have one, though, I'm happy that a lot of people seem to enjoy actually playing the thing, right? That it does apparently feel pretty comfy to hold. I know it looks like really big and bulky, so I think generally it looks like a cool piece of tech is what I'm saying, but it's just maybe not my thing.
I hear, and that's kind of where I landed on when this was initially announced and then the pre-orders went live. But seeing the coverage and kind of getting having people get their hands on it and play around with it, I find myself getting more intrigued and actually excited for it. I did actually jump in on the pre-orders. I pre-ordered the like the base level one, but it's only $5 to get your pre-order in there, but then you're at the back of the line. So this thing might not get into like summertime, maybe if I'm lucky fall time, but I am interested in it. It's a pretty cool little device. I'm honestly way more interested in the fact that you can, and Valve lets you do this with other tech, like you can stream your PC gameplay to even your phone if you want, or to like a Chromecast. But this little device lets you do that as well, but it seems to work incredibly fast, as a lot of reviews are saying. Mm-hmm. And that's why I find myself more interested with, because I have a PC, I do play PC games, but I'd rather be on my couch and play them. And you can do stuff like I'll lug my PC over to the living room and stuff, but if I can just jack into with my TV into this thing and it streams like pretty much one for one, I'm way more interested in doing that.
Yeah, it sounds good. And by all accounts, it's running the games. It does play like pretty well, right? So as for that kind of use, if it's kind of secondary to having your gaming PC, I feel like it's honestly a no-brainer, especially if like if I see myself in a different universe where I'm not like, you know, a console kind of enthusiast and I just have my PC and I wanted to play more games, it's like, why would I not want this? You know, it's just having that handheld experience. And then the other thing for me too, and I guess the other point I would have on it is I would be really interested in the emulation side of this as well, kind of how people are going to kind of break it apart and put different operating systems and stuff. Like it just seems so perfect for that. Like I know the PSP was kind of the king for that back in the day, and I feel like this will finally kind of take that over. And so that would be interesting as well for those, you know, who are interested in those type of modding and all those type of deal. I think that's pretty cool. Like I have one of those kind of cheap emulation things, you know, those little handhelds you can buy. Enjoy it, but it's really finicky. So if I could get that type of thing working on this, then I think that would be something that would really turn it around on top of the Steam stuff too.
Right. And I'm also interested in that too, because I've done that over the years. You know, you mentioned the PSP, where that was like this kind of peak device that everyone just then, you know, jailbroke and then turned it into that, which was kind of hard for. And why we got the Vita having those proprietary memory cards, it made it a whole thing.
Oh, what a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Which arguably tanked that device, but also Sony just, you know, didn't care about it at a certain point as well. Yeah. But yeah, that whole just emulation side of things is really cool. And you have the horsepower behind being able to actually handle these games. Because a lot of these games, if you go like to the PS1 era, it's hard for whatever device to actually run them, even though you think it wouldn't be that crazy. So yeah, if you have the tech behind the Steam Deck running it, then you have potentially, you know, all the way up to what, PS2, maybe PS3 games, if there's already emulation stuff like that, it's the sky's the limit.
Well, right. And then you factor in like the way that it's like the Switch, because they're doing a dock for that thing too, right? Like you can bring it over to TV, similar idea. So, I mean, technically you buy that thing and in a world where all that stuff is up and working, you literally have like every classic console docking to your TV. Like what more would you want? And if you're an enthusiast of old stuff, which I mean, I'm not huge into like retro stuff, but at the same time, that's appealing, especially if you can get it all in one box.
Yeah, I'm the same way, where I'm kind of coming around to that later on, because around the PS3 era, I just started downloading everything. And I just thought, if you buy a game in the store, what are you, a caveman? It's like, just download that. It's super easy. You stream it. You don't have to leave your couch. Yep. And I'm still in that mindset. But at the same time, especially seeing stuff with Nintendo, the direction they're going with their, with that subscription service, where they're not really interested in letting people just buy stuff a la carte anymore. It's like, you just have their subscription. Whatever they decide to put on there, whenever they take it off, you're kind of stuck with that. And seeing that going forward, it's like, maybe we should have held on to these games when we had them. And so I find myself like leaning a little bit more that direction of trying to, you know, just have these games somewhat where if I do want to play them, I'm not, but if I do want to play them, I have them.
I feel you. Yeah. Especially like, and it's interesting too, when you get into the whole like physical digital type of thing, like, do you want to own these games somewhere else? Or are you doing the subscription service? I mean, that's a whole nother conversation. Right. But right. I mean, I'm like all on the digital side now. And so I've kind of just, you got to pick, right. And I only have so much space, and it's just, and that's, I guess, the appeal of the Steam Deck too. And it's just the library of games you can get. Right. But it's an interesting, I guess that's the whole preservation of video games thing. Right. And that's, I think that's what you're talking about, is like the next, I mean, if you can think about the next 10 years of like, what's that going to look like? How are we really going to play a lot of these old games? Especially right. Like you say, Nintendo too, like we could go down a rabbit hole of like the selection of stuff they put on those services, but I'm sure it's not complete in most people's eyes. And
yeah, or just not having that option.
Right? Yeah. That's exactly what we want, is the option. Like, I think the subscriptions are fine, but I don't think it should be the only way to do it. Right.
Yeah, no, and I agree with you. And it's something I'm just becoming now more curious about. But yeah, I'm still that way, where it's like, I'm just going to download games. It's so easy. Skipping a little bit ahead, but I found that same thing with Horizon Forbidden West. You could have bought the game for, in the US, it was $60, like the PS4 retail price. And then free, you got the free upgrade to PS5. But there was this trickery where if you wanted to pre-download the game, preload it, you had to have the PS5 version. And so they got me. I just paid, you know, the full PS5 price, so I could actually pre-download and play at midnight. So there was some weirdness there, but it's like, that stuff is, you know, happening more often now.
Yeah, and it's, and I mean, talking about Sony specifically, they've made that whole thing so confusing with all of these different digital downloads. I had a similar thing happen to me when I bought the Tsushima Iki Island DLC earlier. I think, I guess it was last year now, but I bought that and I ended up buying, they had a few different packs of like the DLC or the DLC plus the game or something like that. And I'd had the original game on PS4 and then played the DLC on PS5, but I bought like some version I didn't actually need. And by the time I'd already downloaded it, there was like no refunds and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's not clear. And I, it's interesting that when you sent me over, like kind of what we were going to be talking about today, I went over and I looked on the store of like, cause I actually didn't know about that Horizon problem with the DLC. And it seemed like, yeah, you could have worked it to get a discount if you wanted to, but they didn't really present it that way. And it was kind of put like, you know, why would you not have bought the PS5 version? But then if you read between the lines, you can get this discount. And then it's like, are they going to reimburse people that kind of got, I wouldn't say deceived, but it's, you know, at the same time, it wasn't clear, right? It's kind of on them, I think, to make it clear for the buyer.
Yeah, they definitely, you know, hope that people would just buy it, you know.
Exactly.
I think they did whatever they could to just try and stay oblivious, even though they knew what was going on, that it was oblivious enough to that would be allowed by, you know, consumers. But mm-hmm. yeah, it was, mm-hmm. they offered that. And then originally, you know, you could upgrade it. But then what they held hostage was, okay, well, if you want to play it right now, then we only see the PS5 version on the marketplace. So it's like, okay, man, I'll do it. I guess it's just 10 more bucks, but it is kind of
preload it, right?
I had to.
All for the preload, yeah. Interesting. I'd be interested. What do you think of that game anyway? I'm a bad PlayStation fan today. I've actually not played either Horizon game. I tried the first one. It wasn't exactly my cup of tea. So I've yet to like, you know, go back and try that again. And so I kind of stayed away from Forbidden West for now, but I hear it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's interesting, that point you brought up, where it is, for some reason, it doesn't call a lot to them, or they try it maybe on sale and it's just not for them. And I don't see how that's the case. Like, I think it's awesome across the board. Like, even the first one, it's already that first original Horizon is super beautiful. The open world it's just really fun gameplay loop to experience, a play in, to climb everything, to fight these. First of all, there's robot dinosaurs. So if that doesn't catch
that's
you,
cool.
I don't know what to tell you, man. It's like, maybe, you know, anything visual isn't for you, because it's like, it's robot dinosaurs. It's
no,
awesome,
it's cool. I mean, the world is sick, man. The thing that took me out of it was I didn't really love the combat. Like, I found it to be a little tedious in terms of like setting up the traps, and like, I got to make sure it's in the right place to lure this guy over here. And it was just a little bit meticulous for me. And I'm also not a huge open world guy. Like, I can play him. Like, I love Tsushima. It was one of my favorite games on the PS4, but that's a secondary thing. So kind of those two things combined, if it's like, it's an open world, it's doing the combat that I really like, maybe not. So I kind of pulled back, and it's too bad, because the world is super cool. Like, those robot dinosaurs. And I know kind of about the twist that happens at the end, and Aloy is a cool character. So there's so much to like, and I would love to give it another shot, but we'll see. But the thing that really swayed me here though, is that overall people liking the new one makes me want to go back and play them more now. If like, if this one had bombed a little bit, I would be less inclined.
I hear you. Yeah, if they weren't capitalizing or improving on the next one, and I think they have for sure. It's hard to just talk about the visuals with this game, because it is very fun. They have improved traversal, and some of the combat mechanics are at least more fine-tuned. It's still very much of the same, so if you didn't like that original combat, you may not like the sequel,
right?
But it's hard to not just talk about the visuals, because it's so gorgeous. Like, it's one of the best-looking games I've ever played, and I find myself going into the photo mode so often. I think that's what's extended my playthrough, is just like, I have to freeze frame.
Hours in the photo mode.
Right. Yeah. Just swirling around. And then I'll freeze frame into that photo mode. And it doesn't make sense how it looks that good in engine. But it does somehow. And it's just a marvel to look at. And it's also really fun to play. So I highly recommend it. But it's also, you got to be kind of, you know, into that mood. It's got to call out to you, and if it doesn't, it just might not.
That's the thing, and you just can't play everything too, right? Like, one of the other reasons I didn't pick it up was because I was like, well, you mean I got to play something for the podcast, right? So it was this or it was Elden Ring, and neither one is really like traditionally my jam. So I picked Elden Ring, and you know, maybe foreshadowing for a bit or later in the podcast, but I'm really liking that one, so I made a good choice, I think.
Well, I want to get your take on that, because I've talked with my co-host Gavin a bunch about it. I want no smoke that Elden Ring's offering. Like, those games are so hard. The Souls games.
Right, yeah.
I respect them. People dig them, but they're just too hard for me. But I love that it's got such critical acclaim. People are just fully, you know, investing their lives into it, loving it. What are you thinking so far early on into Elden Ring? How do you like it?
Sure. Well, I mean, I want to say I'm not a Souls person traditionally either. Like, I played Bloodborne and I really liked it despite getting stuck forever. Like, it took me so many times putting it down, coming back 2 weeks later. Like, I went through that for so many months beating Bloodborne, but I ended up really liking the game. And then I played Sekiro on launch too, because I was pretty excited for that. And I've just really bounced off of it. I know a lot of the Souls community finds it to be the best one because I think they really get into, and I'm really generalizing here, like the whole community, but people really like the parrying, right? And they like the kind of flowy combat between you blocking and them. So, but I bounced off of that one and I just found it to be too tough. And so with Elden Ring, I was like, you know what? I got to give Souls one more shot. I've got one game I like, one game I didn't. And this one looked a lot more appealing to me. And so I jumped in and I'm having a really good time as someone that isn't great at this. And I think, I mean, I won't spoil anything here. Obviously, a lot of people haven't played yet, but I think that the open world aspect of it is really the reason for that. And it's because when I get stuck, you can literally just go in like any other direction and you have so much more to do that you can find something else that is more approachable for you if you don't mind kind of exploring around. Whereas in the other games, if you got stuck, you might have like, you know, one or two more paths that you might have found you could go down, but you might be stuck on multiple of those, right? And then you're kind of just like bashing your head against that wall. And if you're not getting any better, you're just getting frustrated. And this game does such a good job to fix that, at least for me. Because I'm not so concerned with like going through the main path. I'm more than happy to, you know, explore the forest over to the east for 2 hours and collect some experience and come back. Like I'm really enjoying that. And then just the world itself, like you mentioned with Horizon, is very large. And I don't think it's quite as beautiful as Horizon personally. Like the art style is very cool, but I think it looks a little bit less polished than what Horizon offers. But the world itself, like you find, there's just constant stuff you're finding, like little caves, little places to explore. So it's just so dense, and I'm having a really, really good time exploring it despite dying like a billion times.
I mean, dying a billion times, like that's what you sign up for. But yeah. For sure. To touch on some of the things you mentioned, yeah, I have heard the same thing, especially from my co-host Gavin, where, you know, I'm playing Horizon, I'm sending him screenshots and he's sending me screenshots of Elden Ring. And from his perspective, he's like, yeah, it's not as good looking as something like, you know, as Horizon. It's not on that caliber. But I think where it shines is that art direction is just the how these characters are created, how they look on screen. It's so radically unique. And that's also the strength of these, a lot of these Souls games, where they just look so visually different from anything and so mysterious, where you want to learn more. You have these like crazy, horrible enemies that are going on and these vast, you know, really unique looking worlds, where I think that is a strength, at least just breaking apart the visuals with Elden Ring and these Souls games, that they're way more interesting to look at, and they might not have the best, like you said, polish or high resolution textures, whatever. They just look so unique.
Well, that's just it, right? And I think I read somewhere like they're using a pretty old engine to make this, and this is kind of the realm where like I'm not an expert on this type of stuff, but I think they're still using a lot of the same engines they were using for even like Demon Souls or Dark Souls in a lot of ways. So I think it's maybe starting to show a little bit of its edges. Like I definitely don't think the character models the art looks cool, but they definitely don't, like if you look at the faces and all that stuff, they're nowhere near as defined as something you'd see in a lot of those other newer, I guess Horizon's probably using a way newer system, right? So I don't think it's a big deal, but I do think it's something that if you're not already accustomed to, like, oh, I can't wait for the next Souls game, if you're just checking it out kind of as a newcomer, you might bounce off of it a little bit if you're used to playing like the biggest and best like graphical powerhouse games, you know? But yeah, I mean, I think the other thing about the style of the world is the scale of it too, is there's like this massive, you walk out into the field at one point, like really early on, and you just kind of look up and there's this gigantic tree, like you can't even see the top of it when you pan your camera. And I think the Souls games, like Bloodborne, when I played it before as well, they always have like just these, it's almost like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids moments when it's like everything's just so big, or you come across these gigantic castles and you're just like, how the hell am I ever going to explore this whole place? And then you just find like these paths and you do it. And it's really, really cool to have that experience, because it just seems so undoable when you first start, especially like since you can't walk 2 feet without getting stabbed in the back and you're dead again. So it's an experience for sure.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's awesome to hear, because it's such a cool looking game. But it makes me think of, and there's been also these these comparisons to, it's hard not to, but these comparisons to Breath of the Wild, where they had that same kind of idea where you can, anything you see, you can go there. And it seems like Elden Ring also brings it to the table, but it's with this Souls style, you know, combat.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I've been able to go pretty much everywhere I've seen so far. I can see the comparisons for sure. I always think it's like, it's such an unfortunate comparison that everything has to come back to Breath of the Wild. Not that it's, I mean, you got to compare things to the high watermark, but at the same time, I think people just love Breath of the Wild so much that it sets like everything up for failure, right? And it's interesting though. Like, I definitely see so much inspiration though. Like, I haven't played a ton of Breath of the Wild. Admittedly, I'm not a huge Zelda guy, so I shouldn't probably say that out loud. But I mean, I have a huge respect for the franchise, huge respect for Breath of the Wild. And so this is definitely the same thing. It's like Disneyland, right? People always make that comparison of like, you're on a hill and you see three things in the distance. What do you want to go look at? And you're kind of like, thank God there's a map in Elden Ring. And I'm sure there is in Zelda too, where you can kind of put markers down and come back later. And I mean, the other part of the map that's so cool to explore too is right now, because it's so new, I'm playing, like Katie's playing at the same time, and our other buddy Mike is playing, and I'm kind of texting back and forth with them of like, hey man, have you been here? Like, have you guys seen this? And it's just really cool, like how we're exploring differently as well. And we've been to some locations where it's like, well, yeah, we've both been here, but I mean, I found it a completely different way. Like, I might have taken a path through a, you know, a certain, like a sewer or something, and then Mike was teleported there by a random guy, and it's like totally different experience, but we get to the same place, and it's just so cool. I've really not experienced anything like that before in too many other games, like the community portion of it too.
That's awesome. You mentioned something earlier on as well where, and this is where I keep burning myself, but you mentioned how you're kind of this new person jumping in, but you're still having success. And I keep thinking of, there's a GIF from Dumb and Dumber that's always played online where it's Harry going, so tell me, you tell me there's a chance. And I feel like I just need these little bits of, yeah, it's incredibly hard. Don't try this, but maybe. And that's all I need. I'm like, okay, bet, I'm there. I was there with Demon's Souls, remake on PS5. They had this royalty class that let you cast magic, whatever. It's still so hard. But that's all I heard. It's like, cool, I bought it and I couldn't play it. Or with Returnal, it's like, maybe there's someone you can do here. Too hard for me there. But I hear these things. You keep saying that do you think this is somewhat approachable because maybe it's the open world aspect where you can leave and refresh?
It's the open world for sure. For me anyway, just my personal experience. I mean, I'm not good at these games really. I've never been like even in Bloodborne when I beat that, I was never parrying guys. Like, the timing for me just doesn't click for some reason. I can't do it. I just dodge, right? And so I think like if I took the time to master all that stuff, I could probably do it. I think that's what they say up to everyone, right? But I'm not going to tell everyone to get good. Sometimes you just don't want to get good. But I think, like I said, you can run around, you can find weaker stuff, and there's some like pretty weak enemies in the open field as well. And you can really, like with the horse, you can really kind of ride around and cheese them in a way where they can't really hit you if you're smart. So, I mean, if you're into grinding for a few hours instead of trying the same boss over and over again when you're underleveled, you can kind of level up as well. So, I mean, I don't think anyone's going to come and have an easy time, but I would personally say, of all the difficult games that are known for like, oh, you know, why do people play this? Oh, because it's hard and they like the challenge. I think this is the most appealing one that I've come across. And I mean, I would encourage you to try it as someone that was skeptical coming in. Like, I bought this game probably expecting to not love it. And I would say I like it quite a bit.
Okay. That's, I'm interested, but I just don't want to get burned again.
I'm sorry if I waste your money though, man.
That's the thing. I'm going to send you the bill if I can't get past the dog enemy in the beginning or whatever.
Look, we got to set a clause then. If I'm going to refund you, fine, but we got to set, like, you got to make it to at least like X portion into the game, right? You got to give it a fair shake.
That's fair. Yeah, I know with Demon's Souls, and I put in a good amount of time, and it was just too tough. Or you know what? I had success with that game, but I could tell early on, like, what I had to trade for that success was the time, was the grueling, like, trial and error and dying a bunch and getting the timing right. And I could see that it wasn't for me. And I think with these types of games, I know that now, that it's just maybe not for me. I brought up Returnal, had the same kind of issues where I love this world. It's so cool, so visually stunning, but I just can't get used to what they want me to do. I can't just keep dying. I felt like I wasn't progressing at all. And I just kind of, I had to put it down. But, you know, I jumped in early on and bought it full price. I was just bummed that I wish I could try it and just kind of get a taste of it.
Have you tried any of the, I guess, like, masochistic platformer stuff, like Super Meat Boy or Celeste or any of those type of games?
So what's interesting is I love Celeste, and I don't normally, I'm not good at those games. And with Celeste is, I think with Celeste, it's so immediate that you can go in and try something again. But there's time and time again, and how I ended up loving the game, which I understand the people that love these Souls games, where I kept trying. And it seemed every little step, every little stage rather, was so impossible. I would jump into the new one. It's like, oh, I can't, there's no way to beat this. Well, this is a joke. And then I'd try and try and try and get it. And it felt so good. And then the next level, same thing. Oh, this is a joke. There's no way you can beat this level. But then you keep trying. And then when you finally beat it, I love that. That's one of my favorite games ever. But I just can't put that same, you know, like module into these games. And then I don't see how I'd have success in these games.
It's funny you say this. And I feel like we're connecting a lot over this argument, because I'm going to tell you, like, what you just said about Celeste is one of the reasons that I really liked it as well, was just the rapidity with which you get right back in. Like, you die and you're just snap, you're like immediately back there, you can try it again. So it doesn't feel super tedious to practice, right? Like you can do it a million times in a row. Whereas the Souls games, a lot of the time, what put me off of, especially like when I got stuck in Bloodborne a bunch, was not only have you died, but oh, you now have to run back for 30 seconds through a whole bunch of enemies because you spawn so far away. Oh, what's that? You don't have any health potions left, so you better go farm some of those before you do that run back because you're going to die. Oh, what's that? You died while you're farming, like you're even more behind, right? Like it's kind of out to screw you over. I think Elden Ring improves that a little bit, at least, because it's not just the save points now. There's also kind of these beacons before boss fights where you can actually respawn there. And they're oftentimes like really close by. So it's almost as fast as something like Celeste. Like, it doesn't put you right back in the fight itself, but you can get there in like 5 seconds, and there's oftentimes very few enemies. So for me, like, that's another thing that I like in comparison. That's like a quality of life thing, is like you can actually, quote unquote, practice a lot easier if you want to do that as well. Even though it's still incredibly tough. it's not like the game's easy despite that. It's like a quality of life thing, right? It's something at least something they improve for accessibility, which is an area where they don't always do the best, in my opinion, with the From stuff.
Man, you're piquing my interest again, where I'm thinking maybe I could jump in and try this. It's on my list. I definitely have a bunch of stuff that I need to play. I finished Dying Light, at least the story, and then jumped into Horizon. So it's like I've been trying to rush through these games, but it's on my list.
It's just where we're at, man. We say that on the show too all the time. It's like, it's on my list. And what does that mean? It means I like the look of the game, but am I going to play it? I mean, probably not. Like, probably not for a while anyway.
Yeah, and then I tell myself, if I get that Steam Deck, then I can sit on my couch. I can finally jump into my backlog. And it's like, no, it's not going to happen.
That's right. Yeah, I can finally do that. I can finally lay in bed and play Skyrim for the 100th time and do that whole thing. And you know, realistically, what do? You take it to bed and then you drop it on your face in 5 minutes when you fall asleep. and that's how it goes.
Yeah, now with the Steam Deck, it's like, it's going to knock you out if you hit it.
Right, and then you take the next day off work and you actually play all day with your concussion, dropping that thing on your head. So maybe it works out a different way.
Now, I did want, before we leave Elden Ring, there's been, with the reviews, there's more of a conversation. This game, this topic does come up pretty often lately with games like Sifu, Returnal. But do you foresee, some kind of difficulty option or toggle mode, would that ruin a game like this? How do you lean on those, on that topic of, you know, not accessibility, but it's like approachability with these kind of games?
Look, I'm such an advocate of all that kind of thing. Give me as many different customization options as you can. Let me tweak the game as much as I want. Give me as many sliders as you can possibly put in there, for all that kind of thing. And I've had this conversation with Kate a lot on the show too, to keep bringing it up. Like, she's a traditional Souls fan. She's played them all, like master of the game, on the subreddit, all this stuff. And I guess like that community has an idea that it ruins the purity of the game, right? To kind of include those features. But to me, it's like, if you love this game so much, don't you want the biggest portion of people to be able to experience them? And giving a little slider in the menu that's like, you know, increase my armor by 20%, or, you know, increase my damage output by 20%, or give me an extra healing item, or something, like, you know, any little tweak. There's so many different things they could do. And I feel like I just don't really understand the whole, like, it will ruin the experience, because you can just play without it. And, you know, give someone a trophy, or give someone a special collectible item that makes sense in the lore that is, you know, so important to these games, that if you beat it on the regular, you know, regular, whatever that is, then you get this item or something. Like, there's so many workarounds to me, and it just is, I think it's going to end up looking pretty archaic to not have these settings as we move forward, like in the next 5-10 years and all that stuff. And I feel like, this game would only benefit from it. And I really, really wish they had it, because people like you, right, that are so interested, and people like me, like, I only just got over the line to buy this game. I was kind of, you know, on the fence the whole time, like I said, and people like you, I think you would be way more into buying it, right? If you could guarantee yourself you're not going to get instantly stuck. I just don't see the downside, honestly. It doesn't make any sense to me that people wouldn't want those settings.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir. I have those exact same thoughts as you. And especially the idea of, I've had that too, where it's, you can give the hardcore players that want to, you know, beat it without getting touched once, or, you know, want to be on the crazy hardest difficulty, give them a cool special hat, whatever they want to just make them feel cool. But when it's these single player experiences, me adjusting my sliders to whatever degree changes nothing to what another player experiences. So I just don't get how it matters at all. Now, if it's a conversation of the devs didn't plan on it, they have their artistic vision in mind, that's where I'm like, okay, I get that. They want to make what they want to make, cool. But if they're open to these sliders that, you know, don't change the experience for someone else, I don't see how there's any issue with that at all.
Well, I just related to that Metroid DLC that just recently was announced. I'm sure you might have caught it, but that game was in the difficulty conversation too. And I think what they did was, it's not as in-depth as giving you sliders and whatnot, but I mean, they gave the hardcore kind of boss rush, no hits mode in, and then they also gave the easy mode, which I think is great, because a lot of people were like, man, I really enjoyed Metroid, but it was just so hard, I put it down. And now those people can play the game and hopefully have a good time. And then guess what? We're probably going to get more Metroid games, because more people will buy it and play it. So it's just only a positive, I think. But again, the artistic vision thing is kind of where it gets interesting, because I can see, especially playing Elden Ring, like, they really want you to have a certain experience with certain bosses, like the way that you can kind of approach things. And I can see how the game, if you're really, you want to have it a certain way, and you like had such a good experience on the difficult mode, how you'd be like, no, you're playing it, you know, you're playing it wrong. You're not having this great experience that I had. But at the same time, like, why would you want to tell someone else how to play their game, right? Like, just let them play it and have a good time. And for God's sake, let me have some extra armor so I can just get through this castle I'm stuck on, because I really want to go and see what else the game has. And that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at with that.
I'm in the same, 100%, exactly what you're saying is what I want to see. I wonder if these people that are so, it's like gatekeeping, right? They're so just beholden to making sure how they experience it, how everyone else does, and they really, you know, just cherish or just protect these things where it's like they only want certain people, I guess, playing them. But I wonder if that increases more the fact that we have less people going into like GameStops and big stores where you see a person buying a game, so they walk up, they have Elden Ring in their hand, so you can be there because you have nothing to do with your life and be like, oh, you shouldn't, or how are you playing this? Like, let me see, like, what have you played before? Because they're not able to do that, now they're just like going online and controlling the conversation there.
I mean, who knows, right? And I think Elden Ring actually might help this conversation out, because I mean, the Twitch numbers and like the viewership and the sales numbers are just astronomically huge compared to the other Souls games, right? And so for that reason, I'm sure there's tons of people that have bought this that are not quite sure what they're getting into, and they're gonna realize like, man, this is hard, like, we need to have a different mode. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if there were a lot of people online who are kind of new to the series that do complain about it being really hard, and why are there not, you know, options like this if they're coming from a different open world game and they just happen to come across this because of the popularity. So I wonder if it's going to kind of change the conversation, or if it's just going to cause argument online like everything else. I mean, I can't be too optimistic, right?
Yeah, it will. Everything will cause an argument. But to leave this actual topic alone, my last thing I think of is, you mentioned these sliders that can be done. There's a game that did that, and I love this game. It's called Control. The original Control came out, and I thought it was pretty challenging. Somewhat, sometimes it was annoying how challenging it was, but
it was
I got through it. Right, exactly. So I played, you know, I was able to finish it. Love that game. But then a couple months later, they put out, which I think is one of the dopest, you know, modifications you can do, where you could adjust exactly what you're saying. The actual attacks, the amount of attacks you can put out, how fast your gun recharges. Mm-hmm. You can even do it, if you're nuts, you can make it to where more enemies do more damage to you. You have free range, so you can craft a harder experience if you want. And I didn't see anybody complain about that. It's like, and it worked, and it was just a great way to do it. So it's already been done. They proved that remedy. It's like, I want that in every game.
Yeah, no, me too. I think it's technically like, I think it's a Souls thing, right? Overall, like there's a lot of games come into the difficulty conversation, but I think there's something unique to the Souls experience that is so intrinsic, that really is like, more than just this conversation, I guess. But I mean, I bet that within a few games that they release that they will include at least some kind of options like this. I think their hand's going to be forced at some point, but who's to say? I mean, people love this game just without it. So there's no guarantees.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And really, as you start talking about this topic more, it kind of delves more into like the psychology of what people want and what is a challenge and how does your challenge affect someone else's experience. It's very interesting. But yeah, it's you can get into the weeds easily with this whole thing.
Do a whole nother podcast on that, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. But I'm glad that you're jumping in and you're actually having fun. And
it's
and,
good.
Nice. It's on my list, as we said before. So we'll see if I get to it.
We'll see how long I stick with it. That's going to be the challenge. But I'm good for now.
That's cool. And as you mentioned, how long you'll stick with it, I keep seeing on Twitter, like, there's people who are like, oh, I'm 80 hours in, and I just found a new spot that completely unlocks. It's like, how big is this game? It seems like it's massive.
I think it's pretty big, honestly. And I mean, I think the map, there's a couple times when it kind of gets bigger a little bit. Like, I don't want to really spoil anything, but I think it's a combination of, like, it's a big map, but it's also just so dense. And there's inside every, you know, a lot of the bigger buildings, they're like whole dungeons of their own. So you could get lost for, I'm sure, over 100 hours easy if you're unless you're like one hit killing everything and you're really, really good. But I don't think anyone's quite there yet.
No, I mean, we say that, but cut to, you know, 2 weeks from now, people are going to be playing this with like a Guitar Hero controller,
right,
no hit kills, and it's inevitable. People just master everything.
Oh man, those videos always are like, I'm so in awe of seeing people that do that. Like, I saw one guy, like there's a guy that plays on like the guitar. Yeah, Street Fighter. He plays on like the dance pad and like, I mean, anything you can think of, right? It's just crazy.
Anything that's crazy. Super hard to do, he'll master.
It's just nuts.
Yikes. Well, James, we'll transition over to this next one here. We got some PSVR 2 news. This was, you know, about a week and a half old now, but I want to get your takes on, we're getting more news rolling out for PSVR 2. It seems like a fall release is going to happen if, you know, maybe COVID throws more wrenches into the system. But how do you feel about at least seeing this headset? We haven't seen the headset for a while. We got the controllers a couple months ago. We got this headset. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it looks good. I mean, it's a VR headset, right? You're going to look kind of like a dork no matter what it looks like. Yeah. It's never going to be a fashionable fashionable thing to wear. I love how in the blog post on the PS blog, they say it's like a good-looking piece of technology to wear and to have in your living room or something, as if it's going to be like some kind of decoration. But yeah. I mean, it's fine. It's a nice-looking headset. I like the form factor. Looks like it fits with, you know, with the PS5, the console and the controllers and everything. Like, I think it looks nice. I think the tech inside seems to be a pretty big upgrade. I mean, I don't really understand specs and all these numbers and all this stuff, but it looks impressive. I like the way that they I think they said they have like an adjustable lens on the inside. So if your head doesn't fit quite right, you can kind of still have a good experience instead of having to kind of adjust the whole headset. So that's super nice. I mean, the thing everyone comes back to is the cord, right? Like, it's too bad it still has the wire, I think, is the number one thing. But got to roll with the punches, right? Like, it's the nature of this tech. And I'm sure the price is going to be way higher if it was to be wireless. So we can take it like it is. And I think the upgrades, like the haptics inside, also seem really, really cool. Like, I think they were saying you can feel arrows go by your head. And I'm kind of like, on one hand is like, do I really want to feel, you know, like gunfire going right past my face?
Right.
But on the other hand, that's pretty cool. And so if it's anything like in the DualSense, I'm really stoked to try this out.
Yeah, I'm excited. Although I never bought the original PSVR. That kind of just, you know, passed me by. And I eventually jumped into VR with the Oculus and then Oculus 2. And I've been having a blast playing those. And I find it interesting. It's just a different landscape now with PSVR 2 launching with actual competition for like a, you know, something that is on the cheaper end of this consumer end, you know, VR unit. So I wonder how Sony's kind of going to start to compete and what their route is going to be, because you have Oculus that's way cheaper and can still handle playing these games. Like, you look at RE4 VR, runs really great. It adds a port of an older game, but there's a lot of these experiences that look dope, and this is a, you know, $300 unit. It's wireless and you don't need a thing to play with. Doesn't need to talk to a PC or a console. So I'm curious what you think Sony's going to try and craft this as like its own kind of lane almost.
Yeah, I mean, my sense of it is kind of like Sony is wanting to, I mean, I don't think the PC market is a huge competition yet, because not everyone who has the PlayStation is going to have a gaming PC, right? Like, I think, I guess the one you're saying you don't need the PC is a bit of a different beast. That sounds like an amazing headset. I've yet to try anything really like that. I think the Sony's major selling point, though, is like, again, it's going to be the software, right? Like, they've announced the Horizon VR game, and I'm sure that that means there's going to be a lot of other of their popular franchises coming to the VR headset. And I think that's the one thing that was kind of missing from the first unit. And so I think that's going to be the selling point. And again, it's like kind of that PlayStation ecosystem, right? And this generation, it seems like they're really leaning into like that Apple thing of like, you want to have the PlayStation this, you want to have the console and like our controller that's special and our headset. And I think a lot of people are like, will buy into that. But as far as the headset itself, I mean, it does make more sense to get a lot of these PC ones that are, you know, I guess better technology, or the wireless is a huge selling point. But I think that the PlayStation brand will carry it, just being sort of attached to that. And then also the fact that a lot of those headsets do require a gaming PC, and those are very expensive. And so the PS5, I guess, is still cheaper than that, although buying that plus the VR headset, I'm sure, is like expensive too. It's going to be interesting, though. I hope it does well, because it just seems like a nice entry point, right, for people that are new to VR. At least that's my sense of it. Like, it's kind of the plug and play nature of the console. You don't have to really set too much up. That's what I'm looking for, at least.
Yeah, and you touch on a good point where I think the strength is that first party lineup. If they're going to actually, you know, or at least contract out and have devs work on their properties. I mean, we got a little bit of that with PlayStation, the original PSVR, but they're already going hard with, we have Call of the Mountain from FireSprite, and Gorilla's mm-hmm, working on it as mm-hmm. well. If they can lean harder into that, where it's like, yeah, you can get a cheaper VR unit that, you know, is wireless, but this thing, if you want to play these exclusive experiences, you know, if you want that first party kind of a coat of paint that Sony's known for, then you're going to get a PSVR too. But I'm just hoping that they really do lean on that. And it's not just like, we get Call of the Mountain and then just other third party stuff, and then, you know, PSVR dies or something at some point. But I want them to lean harder into that.
That would be the worry, right? And that's what I want to. I actually never got a PSVR, the first one. I mean, we started the show a couple of years ago, and I would have had one. You know, if we were doing the show at the time, I probably would have got one. But at that point, I was like, I'll just wait for the second unit. Hopefully it's wireless. Move on from there. It's not wireless, but I'll get it anyway. I think the brand is what will take it, though. And like I said, with that Horizon game, I mean, how they'd be foolish not to do a God of War, you know, VR game. And Astrobot, I'm sure, will get more after being so successful the first time around. I'm glad that they're going to have the PSVR 1 games accessible on there as well too, which is super nice, because I think a lot of people who didn't get PSVR 1 might, you know, want to check those out as like a backlog before all these newer games start coming out for the PS5 and like the, you know, whatever's next after Horizon on the PSVR. The other thing too is, I wonder if there's a realm where, as Sony's been putting a lot of stuff on the computer, I wonder if eventually does the PSVR connect to your computer as well and play VR Sony games from there, because that would just solve the whole problem of competition in a way too.
Yeah, that's one thing. It's very curious, because a couple of years ago, that wouldn't really be an option, but we've seen them, like you said, port a lot of these games to PC. They're really interested in that space now. There's a lot of money to be made if this thing could communicate with your PC. Like, so there's the Oculus that also works with the PC, and there's other things that need an actual PC to work VR-wise, but that Oculus you can have wirelessly. It can talk to your Steam library. It can play those games both wired and wireless. If the PSVR 2 can at least work there, where I can play, you know, Half-Life Alyx or something on my PSVR 2, that would then bridge the gap, and you have these PC consumers that do want to, you know, try and get something like that that is maybe still cheaper than like a Valve Index, which is top of the line. There's a lot of potential there, but it's a matter of, is Sony finally, you know, more comfortable, you know, working across the board, and because of the money that could be made and money talks, that they would, you know, accept PC a bit more, and they're starting to.
Seems like a pipe dream to be able to play like anything VR on their hand on the computer. Hey, but I mean, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if like near the end of the PS5 life cycle, whatever that is, or, you know, partway into this, that like they're, you know, PlayStation VR games coming to Steam, just like the rest of them have. So, I mean, it would be cool. And it's like we were saying before too, about the accessibility, is like, why do you not want people to play your games in as many places as they can? It just doesn't make any sense. Sell them to everyone, play everywhere, do your thing. You know, like why lock people down onto just one place?
I agree 100%. I think these, you know, big console makers are starting to realize that. Xbox is ahead of the game, but I think They're all across the board, and Nintendo has no idea what the hell's going on, but
well, they're their own thing. They do their own thing.
They're like, oh, we have Labo. Does that
They're like, yeah, we have a cardboard headset you can put on your head. And it's actually cooler than you'd think.
Right. And I'm sure it is. It's a cool little piece of technology. I'm glad that they are weird and wacky enough to make something like that. But as far as like this competition, it's really with, you know, Xbox, with Sony, at least with them deciding to work across the board and realize, oh, we can make more money if these things are easily purchasable and can work on multiple outlets. It's not just on our ecosystem.
Yeah, right. And that's just the thing, right? So I hope that the games coming to PC from Sony's end is an indicator of that. It just makes sense, right? But who knows? Like if they're kind of, you know, they've been so resistant to crossplay and other things like that in the past. And it seems like on one hand, as appealing as it would be to have those available on the PC just the same way. At the same time, it's like, it is Sony. Are they just going to keep it sort of to themselves and be really digging their heels in on that? I hope not. But I mean, that's what it seems like it would be to me if I had to guess right now.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's very interesting, and I'm very curious to see what's going to go on. I feel like this year they are leaning towards we're going to get an actual, you know, price and release date. Seems like it's been consistent with these news rollouts, so I'm hoping that we're going to get something maybe this summer, and then fall, bam, you get a PSVR 2 in your house. Here's hoping.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, I would expect we'd see some more around E3 time, right? That would make the most sense, especially since they showed the whole picture of the unit now too. It doesn't make sense they'd be quiet on that. And then I think a lot of places online are saying, yeah, this fall or maybe even slightly before that, I guess. So let's hope so. I got to get on those pre-orders the second it gets announced, though. That's for sure.
I don't know if you were able to sign up, but they did have, so Sony put out a, it's just like a stock website about the PSVR, but then you at the very bottom, right, you can sign up for an email update. And it does say if you want to be first to pre-order. And I did that, of course. I'm not sure if that's really where they're going to start rolling them out, but yeah.
Well, that's what they did for the PS5. So, I mean, I guess a similar system. Who knows if it'll work as well. I would assume there's going to be a lot less people jumping on this right away than the console. So I'm sure it'll be a lot more successful.
Right. Yeah. And that's actually how I got my PS5. I was in that email rollout and I was able to get one, and it was dope.
Yeah. It for you and I, it was. For many other people, they're still cursing that day.
Yeah. They even sent me, there was another rollout and they sent me another email. It's like, hey, you want another one? It's like, well, I find other people VIP that don't have one yet.
It's the podcast fame, man. This guy's got a good show over here. We got to get him a second console.
I guess so. They wanted me to pay for it though, but it's like, okay, I guess I'll buy another one. I don't know. But I didn't in the end.
Yeah, well, you know, one's enough.
Yeah, yeah. And they're also so weird and obtuse. It's like, where am I going to sit on it? What do I do?
It's a headache, dude. I got to rearrange my whole setup over there in a few days just to get it to fit properly. I'll tell you what.
Yeah, it's they definitely went with the choice, and we are stuck with it. But transitioning on more PlayStation news, we got, and actually today, the review embargo lifted for GT7, Gran Turismo 7. So it's getting really high critical acclaim. We got an 88 Metacritic. VG247.com gave it 100. IGN gives it a 90. Push Square gives it a 90. Are you on the hype train for GT7? Where do you lie on these really realistic driving games?
You know, as the PlayStation podcast host that I am, I've come on the show today and I admitted to you that I did not play Horizon. And I'm going to again admit to you that I am not playing Gran Turismo 7. Although that might be a little bit less surprising. Those games are super niche for that one kind of audience, right? Not to say that it doesn't look super cool. And especially seeing these reviews and watching the state of play a couple weeks ago, I was pretty impressed by the game and like the way it looks. Those realistic driving sims always have just the most insane graphics, and they look wonderful. So yeah, I mean, going through the reviews today, I think what's blown me away the most and what makes me the most happy is just the emphasis on the single player content that they've put in there. And I know there's some talk about like, it kind of progresses slowly at the start and all that stuff. But as I've been playing some Forza on Game Pass, and I've really enjoyed it. And they shove all the kind of social stuff really in your face. There's like the social hub. There's other drivers going around. There's like the drivatars and all that stuff. And I think where Gran Turismo is going to succeed a lot is in that single player and just all the different missions. It just seems like there's a lot to do. And it kind of has that old school pre-online sort of feel to what they want you to do with the campaign. And so I hope that that's kind of what people are looking for, because I would love to see this game have a lot of success. And if the reviews are any indication, I mean, I guess it's going to. But then at the same time, it's like, how well do these racing games really do? I think Gran Turismo is one of the ones that could actually do pretty well, but within the context of being, you know, a driving sim, right?
Yeah, it's weird where we're talking about Elden Ring. I feel like this is the game that Elden Ring players use to just like cool out, is this crazy, incredibly realistic racing sim. And I'm in the same boat you were talking about. It's like, I respect Gran Turismo, but it's just, it's too, you know, fine-tuned, where it's like everything is customizable and realistic, and you have to change your tire pressure and get tabs on your license. It's like, I don't want any of that. I like Forza, how approachable it is. You could jump in, especially the last one was really fun to just get in and yeah, play, right, and drive anywhere. I'd lean more that direction.
Yeah, and as someone that's not a huge car enthusiast, I don't really want to get into the weeds of, like, you know, tuning my pistons and doing all that whatever you do with your car type of stuff. Like, I don't really get it, you know, so it's not like I really want to do that. I think what's interesting about this game, and what I'm most interested to see the feedback on, is the whole, they really seem to be honoring the history of cars, right? And like telling you all about, oh, this is the history of the Mustang, and it was invented in such and such place, and, you know, all these details. And it's cool, because on one hand, for people who are new to the game, they might get something out of that and you know, learn about these cars. I don't know how much appealing that really is to me, but it seems like they have a lot there. But at the same time, I'm thinking about it, and it's like, a lot of the people who are going to buy this are going to be car enthusiasts, right? People that already know a lot of this information. So are they just going to be like buttoning through the history of like Henry Ford and all this stuff? You know, like it seems like kind of a weird choice. Cool that they have it, though. I will say, like, I just don't know how appealing that is. You know, people skip cutscenes in games all the time. Are you really going to listen to about the 2016, you know, Dodge Viper or something? I don't know. but yeah, it seems like content, there's a lot of content, at least. I just don't know if all of it's a hit, I guess.
No, that's a fair point, because it is a weird spot where, are they appealing to these car enthusiasts who are arguably just going to, you know, collect cars, drive cars, and maybe they're not playing this. It's there, maybe there's just fans that really love to soak into this kind of stuff and have these in-depth options to, you know, in their driving sims, and really like these hardcore driving sims. But are they the ones who also want to read into the history? I don't know, but it seems like at least they, I respect that it's there, you know, at least they are trying to pay homage to just how, you know, deep the history goes. And it also kind of just represents how seriously they take the series in general, where they go into the, you know, absolute finest minutia on these different companies are making cars, different cars themselves. I like that that's there, but it's, for me, it's like, man, I don't want that at all. But I dig that at least what other kind of game is paying such an homage to the history of something it's based on to have like a full-blown little museum where you can walk around and learn all this stuff?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the only other example would be like Super Smash Bros., right? Like the Museum of Nintendo with all the trophies and all the information in there. I guess that's what I would say. But you're right. There really isn't anything like that. And even just playing Forza recently, I mean, there's a lot of cars in there too, but it doesn't have that historical kind of collect-a-thon. I was reading one review. I think it might have been The Verge earlier today on Gran Turismo, and they were almost likening it to like Pokemon and having to collect, you know, all the different types of Civic or all the different types of whatever car it is. And there's something cool to that. And I could see myself, if I was that type of person, really getting into that type of thing, especially if you have to earn them by, you know, completing races and stuff, as opposed to just sort of buying them from a store. Although I know there is like microtransaction stuff in GTA as well. So I don't know if I love that. I mean, it's fine as an option, I guess, but I hope there's no predatory type of stuff going on. And you always got to wonder, right?
Yeah, same. And it's, I guess we'll see more reception, you know, once this game comes out over the week or two, if from consumers, if people are like, hey, it's, you know, charging me to whatever, you know, swap out my tires. It's like, I have to pay money to do that.
Oh man, I hope it's not that. Yeah, yeah, that's pay to win type of stuff. The one thing I did see apparently was there's like limited time cars for sale in the store, and then they cost a certain amount of money, right? And you can earn it in the game, but I guess if it's, you know, only on sale for a weekend, do you have time to save up your in-game currency, or do you feel like pressure to buy? So I guess there's that going on, but I mean, I feel like a lot of people who are going to be in there looking at that store, they might be willing to spend a few bucks anyway, right? People are oftentimes these days okay with spending a few bucks if there's something they really care about. So, you know, if you're a car guy, if you're a car girl, whoever you are, favorite cars in the store, why not spend an extra 10 bucks? You already spent like 90 bucks on the game at that point, you know, like just get your experience.
Yeah, I wish I was more into cars. And I just, at the heart of it is, I'm just not, I like, you know, driving them in kind of an arcadey scenario, but I just don't care about cars enough. And I really wish I did, because it's, I love kind of just the machinery and digging into something. I love collecting hobbies. It's like, that would just be another hobby. And I guess what makes me somewhat interested is I've repaired cars that I own over the years, like my Honda Accord, I have a Honda Accord 05 that is running great still. And it's super old and I just change the oil. Any like random thing that pops up, I'll look it up on YouTube. Thankfully, there's a YouTube video so I can fix it myself. But
God
so that
bless
has,
you too, man. Thank you, right. YouTube.
Yeah, I'll never be one of those people that are recording me changing an oil or whatever, but I love that it's there because now I have that information. And because of that kind of stuff, I do kind of find myself more interested in just like respecting the machinery and the engineering that goes into play, but it doesn't transcend into learning about cars or remembering different models and the history. It kind of passes me by.
Yeah, same here. And one thing, apologies if you heard my my upstairs neighbors there with the footsteps, but yeah, I'm with you completely. And as far as driving games go, like if I'm sinking my teeth into one, usually it hasn't really been since like Burnout Paradise that I've really gotten into a driving game. And Burnout is like my jam. Burnout Takedown, Burnout Revenge, like those are my driving games, man. Those are the ones. That and Mario Kart, like who can beat Mario Kart? But that's a totally different beast than this. Although, like I said, I have been enjoying Forza, and that's a surprise to me. I think it's just you're constantly unlocking stuff, right? So many experience points all the time for everything you're doing. You just feel good playing that game, which is why I think I've stuck for a few more hours than I normally would with some other car games.
Same with Forza. The last one really hooked me in, and I'm just not a big racing fan, but something about you have the open world, you can drive anywhere, a lot of the different little challenges, you're constantly unlocking different cars, and you can upgrade them fully if you want to. You can dig into that. I just really loved what they do with the Forza series, and I'm just had a blast playing it. I kind of dropped it off, I think, once the Halo Infinite multiplayer released, because that was like the week after.
Yeah,
and I just left that behind and went fully into Forza, Halo. But there was a time where I was just like obsessed with that newer Forza.
Man, yeah, I had a similar experience. I played Forza after Halo, but I mean, I kind of waited until the Halo hype died down to start checking out Forza. So it's just the opposite little flip for me. But man, yeah, Halo, not to go down that rabbit hole, but that's a great game. At least the multiplayer side, really enjoying it.
Same. And I love the campaign too. I had a blast with it as well. I thought the story was cool. I know there's a lot of critique on the story, but I just find myself, I love that world. And so I was just happy to be back in there. And it's kind of the same, almost like a spiritual reboot with the story beats and the stuff that happens in the story with that first one. I just loved everything about I didn't like the multiplayer stuff early on with the progression system, but they did.
Oh, yeah,
kudos
yeah.
to 343 for tweaking that pretty quickly along the way.
Yeah, they did a pretty good job. And the campaign, I think I played the first few hours, got pretty into it. Then the open world kind of got there and I was like, you know what? It's a little bit much for me. I'm going to back out, judging by the size of it. I think what might do it for me, though, when I come back is when they finally let us do it co-op, because that was something that was really missing before. And I mean, I don't think I've ever really played a Halo campaign by myself. It's always been, you know, that couch co-op, or at least I don't know if you can even do online in some of the other ones. I'm sure you can. But regardless, it's a co-op campaign for me. So maybe I'll check it out then. But we'll see. We'll see. I'll probably mainline that one. You know, there's a lot of little points on that map that's a little bit much.
We'll transition here. So, you know, I had one topic to bring up as well. So, and I wrote it down like an idiot, but many first-party PlayStation games were cross-gen this year, yet still receive strong review scores. So you have you have Horizon, you have Miles Morales was one of the cross-gen games. Sackboy, there you go. And so people were, and I was kind of in the boat where I was a bit more grumpy about it, because I think, okay, PS5, I want to see the full potential unlocked. But then these games arrive, and they're incredibly dope, and I don't see any reason to like doubt them anymore. But how do you feel about some of these games out of this first year, now into the next year of PS5 being cross-gen? Do you have any issues with that anymore?
I don't think I've ever really had an issue with it, honestly. I mean, it's kind of like what we've been saying this whole show. The kind of the theme is like, let us play where we want, right? And if the game can run on the PS4, like if Miles Morales runs fine on there, then why not have it on there? I mean, actually, my friend Mike, I brought up earlier, playing Elden Ring, he's actually playing on PS4 right now because he doesn't have a PS5, or like his PC, I guess, doesn't run it. And so the fact that he's a huge Souls fan, he's able to still buy that on the PS4. Sure, it's not the best version. It probably doesn't run well in a lot of cases, but at least it's there. So I think that's fine. I think there is a little bit of concern as we move on. Like, you know, is the development on the PS4 holding back what they could be doing on the PS5? And I don't know. Like, I guess I would want to learn more about the development side before I really make a judgment on that, because it's like, I feel like it's easy to assume, you know, oh, some of the budget's being taken away, but these games make so much money anyway. And I think that after the whole Cyberpunk debacle and all that kind of stuff, that hopefully they're learning, like, you know, this better work at least decently out of the box. So I think it's a good thing. I don't know how long it's going to continue. And I think a lot of it's because of the pandemic, right? And the fact that the, you know, the chip shortages, can't get the PS5s. Everyone knows about this by this point. But I think that just having that less, that lower number of PS5s out there is incentivizing to continue the PS4 versions, right? But yeah, I'm with you. I don't think the PS5 versions have really suffered. Slightly slower to release patches because they're working on two versions at once, sure, but I can put up with that if it means that, you know, several hundred thousand more people are going to get to play the game. That's fine with me.
Yeah, I've changed gears. I've changed that tune. I think it was around when Miles released, because we're still kind of, we're in the weeds. We didn't know. We knew that these games were coming that are going to be cross-gen, but we just didn't know what to expect. And then you have Miles look great on PS4. And then also that PS5 version seems premium. It feels like you're getting this next-gen version. There's ray tracing in there, different frame rate modes. Same thing with Horizon, where you have this game that doesn't make sense to me how this game runs the way it does. It looks beautiful on PS5, but it still runs great on PS4. So I'm cool with it now. But I think you're right, where as we get further in after this second year, I think it's going to get a little weird. Can these developers still squeeze all the juice out of the PS4 and still have a competent PS5 version? I don't know. I'm a little hesitant, I guess, still, even though I say that, on that God of War Ragnarok that's coming down the line.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But still, I know they're going to kill it. I know it's going to be great, but I just, there's still a little part of me. But after that, I think we should kind of transition into PS5, hopefully.
I think you're probably right. And I think it's going to come down to also that a lot of these games, I mean, they must have been developed for both systems at the same time, right? Like, they just must have been, because they're way too big and take way too long to not have been, that not have been the case. But I mean, I would imagine now whatever the next projects are probably going to be full steam ahead just for the PS5, unless it seems like the kind of thing where it's coming out soon enough where they're unsure about the stock and like being able to have enough out, or maybe it's just, maybe we're wrong and it's just easy enough to make those two versions at once. Like maybe the tech is just similar enough to where it's really not that much effort and it's worth the time. I mean, I don't know. That's the kind of thing that I would personally be really, really interested to learn about. But I mean, yeah, my opinion would just be keep them on there as long until the games are like not able to run anymore, because there's going to be a point to which it just won't work, right? Like I'm actually pretty surprised just playing Elden Ring and how expansive that game is, like that it does run on the PS4 well enough, considering like Cyberpunk didn't. And I mean I know they're very different and all that, but there's going to be more Cyberpunks eventually, I think, that come out and are overconfident in their PS4 Xbox One kind of version. And once that happens a couple more times, I feel like it'll be kind of a PR nightmare that companies want to avoid, and then they'll stop kind of trying to hold on to the PS4 any longer.
Yeah, it's interesting as you bring that up, and it's something as we talk crap about Nintendo, somehow they're able to still squeeze juice out of the Switch. We'll get these ports that have no business running on Switch. Like I think they got, what's that? Multiple
say, they just got No Man's Sky on there in the last Direct, and that was something people were like, how the hell is that running on there?
And it's still happening. So it's like they're, as we're complaining about, oh, are these games going to suffer because PS4 version? Switch is running, I don't know how old school architecture on that. It's like a mobile chip and it's still able to do it. So maybe we're just complaining about nothing.
Well, right. Yeah. And I mean, I'm not a huge graphics guy at the end of the day anyway. Like, do I love beautiful games? Sure. But if something has to be like downgraded visually to run nicely and it can still work on the PS4, like to me, that's fine. It's when it starts to chug and, you know, glitch out and have all these severe problems where it's like, that's probably not the best idea anymore. So it just depends how they want to optimize it, I guess. But yeah, the Switch, I mean, some of those ports aren't so, are like very impressive, considering a lot of the time you hear like the Switch version is not great, you know, like avoid this at all costs. But then occasionally there's one that just knocks it out of the park, and you're like, this is some kind of wizardry or something, right?
It's nuts. And kudos to those devs who are able to, and I wonder if they like something about in the creative process where it's like, we're super limited, so what can we do to make this worth, where it's like limitations breed, you know, creativity, or whatever the actual saying is. But it seems like it's full blown that with the Switch, where they're so limited, but they're able to create these different lanes and new ways to approach the problem to get it to run there in the first place.
Yeah, I think that's just Nintendo in general, right? Like I think that Nintendo's the king of like, this is our system, we make the games for it, and we can use the tech the best. Like, there's nothing that comes out on Switch that I can think of that ever looks better than what Nintendo makes. I mean, one of my favorites to look at is just like the Xenoblade series and like those open worlds. Like I haven't even really played the game, to be honest, but I've went and watched so many videos on it just because of what you're saying of like, how is this on the Switch? And I mean, comparing it to some of the other stuff that comes out on there. It's like night and day difference. Like you'd think it's a different console.
Yeah, it's just a testament to how they understand their architecture so much, or even Mario Odyssey. It still looks amazing to me, and it's just, and they really understand their art style with that one, but it just looks so awesome.
Man, even Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, which is an upgraded Wii U game, still looks good, you know, and that still looks great.
Yeah, it's they're like you said, they're wizards over there. So it's just, it's funny as we get into the weeds of, you know, different nerds complaining about these next gen versions, blah blah blah. The with Nintendo and the Switch, they're just completely different direction, and they're still able to crank out these, you know, top notch looking games.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm looking forward towards the Switch Pro whenever that comes out. I'm definitely on the train for wanting that and wanting some more power behind it. But I mean, I haven't really bought anything on there that's given me a lot of problems.
Yeah, same. My Switch doesn't get a lot of use, but I'll jump in every once in a while. And I know Arceus, or however you pronounce that, Pokemon Arceus just came out a little while ago. People love it. That's one where I do want to jump into. I'm not a huge Pokemon fan, but the open world thing, you had me at open world, so I got to try it.
Yeah, I picked up my Switch when that came out was the first time I picked my Switch up for quite a while. And I actually have Drift going on, so I got to send my Joy-Cons away. But I had to get through Pokemon first. And now that that's done, I got to ship them off. But yeah, that's one of the ones I was talking about, actually. I liked Arceus a lot, but when you compare like the graphical style of it compared to some of the other stuff that runs on Switch, you're like, how the hell is this the standard? You know, like it's such a variation.
Yeah, it's nuts. Do you have thoughts on, it was over the weekend, it was a weird drop, but you have that new edition of Pokemon. I forget what it's called.
Violet and Scarlet.
Gotcha, there you go. And it's dropping this later this year somehow. And do you know, I'm not, you know, too in tune with Nintendo stuff, so do you know much about it? Is this a full-blown different experience or like another kind of reskin of that Arceus one?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm a pretty big Pokemon fan, actually. So from what I've gathered on it, I think it was... It's not the same idea as Arceus. I think it's more similar to the regular ones in terms of like you go through the gyms and that sort of system. But I think it's going to be kind of more that open world style of Arceus on top of it. And so, I mean, it's hard to say, right? We haven't really got any information aside from that trailer. But I know it's a new gen, like it's Gen 9. It's going to be, I'm assuming, some new Pokemon and stuff. Like we saw those starters and Pokemon. I mean, it's such a big property, right? It's like the most profitable thing ever, and there's just I mean a lot of people are like, it's so surprising to see another game after Arceus, and it is, but then at the same time it's like, well, they've got, you know, anime to make, they got manga to make, trading cards, like this thing has to come out on a schedule because it's all just tied together in this gigantic web of marketing. So I don't know, I wish Pokemon would slow down, honestly, and work a little harder on each version, make it real special, but that's a different argument, because that's not going to happen anytime soon.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's very interesting, and I saw that drop, and I was like, okay, I don't know enough about this last one that came out, but there's another one coming out
this holiday,
and it looks like it's still, and it's not DLC, it's like its own, you know, experience, so I found that pretty crazy.
Yeah, well, they haven't done a mainline one since Sword and Shield, and I think that was 2019, right? Or 2020, like maybe? Like it was a while ago. So they're due. It's just kind of surprising we've had these couple other ones in between with the Diamond Pearl remake and Arceus. So we're just getting endless Pokemon over here. It's like Call of Duty and Pokemon, the things that never stop.
Although even Call of Duty, they're finally you know, taking a break now. So we'll see if
I never thought I'd see the day, man. Never thought I'd see it.
Right. And it's when you see that stuff, it's always going to be good news. Like, look at Ubisoft with Assassin's Creed. It's like, it seems like unless they completely drop the ball, taking that time always breeds a better experience when they do finally release something. So I'm hoping more studios and a publisher is able to follow suit.
I'm so with you. And with Pokemon especially, like I really don't understand. Like, they have so many spinoffs that the Pokemon community would just love. Like, they released that Pokemon Snap last year, and people just went crazy for it because it's nostalgic and it's Pokemon and it's what a lot of fans want, right? So I don't see why they wouldn't just listen to that feedback and like, okay, we're taking a year off the regular mainline games, let's release like a Pokemon Stadium remake just because people love that, and then we'll actually take a whole extra year and polish this next Gen 9 whatever it is up to be super different and unique. And I mean, I say I don't see why, and the reason is because it makes a lot of money every year and it sells like a billion copies, and you know, that's the reason. But I think that's what fans would really want, is that kind of take your extra time, make something really cool and change it up in the way that we want, because they're so iterative, right? it's just the kind of the way it is, and it's the way Pokemon's gonna stay.
Yeah, it's interesting, and yeah, I'm curious for that next next release, but I just don't know much about Pokemon. Yeah. But
and you know, if you're not in at this point, it's hard to get there. I think it's one of those things that's just you're either ingrained in there or you're kind of out, right? It's intimidating to start something that's so big when you're not really in there.
That's the thing. I think they have more of a connection with me. Anything that's more retro, those original release of Pokemon, that's what I grew up with, so that's what I recognize. So stuff that leans that direction, cool, I'm in. But as they get more into the, you know, they have to continue. They have so many different Pokemon now, and it's, I get it. That's, people love that. But because I've been disconnected for so long, I'm more interested in them doing that kind of stuff. That piques my interest versus the newer stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see. I trend towards liking the older stuff more so too with Pokemon. I mean, I grew up coming home and watching Ash on TV every day after school, right? Yep. Like that's the dream to have his life. But I mean, yeah, I followed through all the gens, and I think the newer ones have been more misses than hits, and you kind of see some of the cracks of like the same formula the longer it goes on. But at the same time, I still play pretty much all of them. You know, it's just one of those franchises that just holds that place right in here, and you gotta continue playing it. You know, it is what it is. And I know I'm probably not gonna get the best, most polished RPG every time, but it is what it is. It's Pokemon. That's the price of being a fan.
I hear you. All right, James, we'll end on this last one here. So some thoughts on PlayStation upcoming exclusive for 2022. So I already have a bunch of bangers out of the gate with 2022. You have Horizon, we have GT7, Sifu is huge. So looking forward, what's planned, we have Forspoken coming out from Square Enix, May 2022. It's not first party, but it's a timed forever long exclusive to PlayStation. How do you feel about this game? Have you been following it? Are you interested at all?
Yeah, Forspoken is an interesting one for me. I'm pretty interested in it, to be honest with you. I think that what's got me really into it is the setting on it, actually. Like I love the concept of it kind of being an old school kind of world, like that fantasy type of setting, but the character is from the modern day. Like I think that's a really fascinating setup. And one thing that kind of I'm a little bit tired of as someone that likes a lot of RPGs is it's always like that medieval kind of fantasy sort of knights and dragons and wizards and all that stuff. And at least this is doing something kind of different. And so that's kind of got me in. But I mean, the game itself looks great, and I think that it's definitely something I'm looking forward to for sure. Like there's so many games coming out in this next year or so. Like it's hard to make that list like we talk about. But Forspoken, I mean, yeah, it's looking great. Are you interested in playing that one too, or what?
I am as well, and I think if they hit the right time frame where there's nothing else big around it, then I think I'm easily going to jump in. So that's how I caught on to the first Dying Light. If I remember correctly, it was like that first year of the PS4, there wasn't a whole lot coming on, or there wasn't that it launched with. So there was a somewhat of a drought. I jumped in, loved that game. And I'm hoping that I have enough of my backlog finished up where I'm interested enough where it's like, okay, there's nothing else going on, I'll jump into this. But from what I can think of, there isn't anything crazy big releasing around the same time. So I am interested. I might buy this day one. The combat looks really cool, really stylized. I like that. Like you said, we were saying that's, you know, modern take on this kind of medieval environment, but the fluid movement animations, the just action heavy side of it, just, you know, that checks all the boxes for me. If you say open world, then I'll pre-order right now too. It's like, it's all the things that I want. So it does look really cool. I think I'm gonna check it out.
Yeah, right. It I hope it's somewhat similar to the Final Fantasy VII remake. I know like they're obviously very different, but at the same time, like I had such a good time with sort of that action focused RPG and you know, being from Square, obviously not the same team and everything, but I'm hoping for something similar of that type of quality, and I think we're gonna get it. Honestly, it looks good so far. Interestingly enough, though, I should say, I just saw online it might have been delayed. Apparently, there was a little post earlier 3 hours ago.
Recently,
it's from, I don't know if it's a reliable source. Maybe we shouldn't go too far down into this, but
well, we could just with a grain of salt. But interesting, this is breaking news.
Interesting. Well, if it happens, you heard it here first, Plastic Hearts Podcast.
Yeah, so I just Googled Forspoken. I'm not seeing anything crazy pop up at all.
It's comicbook.com, apparently, but
that's I'll get news source from there once in a while. Yeah. You're right. So it looks like they're the only ones to have it on here, but they are saying that it's been reportedly been delayed. No new date.
Doesn't seem to have a date or anything like that, but
yeah.
Keep your eyes open, though. Hopefully not. Yeah. Hopefully not.
I wonder if they were pretty this close to their March or May initial release date, I wonder if it's just a couple months down the line. I don't know if it's like full blown. We need a whole another year. So maybe they're going to shoot for summertime or like holiday November kind of time frame.
Yeah, they've been doing that a lot, those little adjustments on release dates. And I feel like a lot of it has to do with like they want it to release in a certain proximity to something else, right? Like they don't want to cannibalize their own sales in a way. So I feel like, you know, it might be that Forspoken needs extra time, or maybe it's something that's getting something else getting released that's shuffling the whole schedule around. And, you know, you never really know. But yeah, hopefully it's only a short delay, if anything, because it looks to be pretty close to finished, right? You'd have to think, especially coming out later this year. So let's hope it's not like a crisis or anything like that over there, if it is delayed.
Yeah. Yeah, I would imagine. Yeah, just a couple months down the line, too. But at this point, when I hear more delays with stuff, unless it's something I'm incredibly, even if it's stuff that I've been super crunk for to play for the whole year, there's already enough out there where it's like a couple months is fine, because it's not like we don't have anything else to play, really.
That's it, right? And I mean, at the end of the day, you say it's disappointing if something gets delayed, but you're right. You kind of just, you read the news, you're like, oh, that's too bad. Like, you know, that's the whole thing. I read the news, I open it. Oh, that's too bad. Well, I hope the team gets the extra time. Don't have to crunch, you know, like,
yep.
Wish them all the best. Take your time. And then you're sad for like an hour, and then you realize, well, I have 25 other things installed on my console and I haven't beaten half of them. So let's get to work. And that's kind of what it is.
The only really big pill that was hard to swallow within the past couple of years was when Last of Us 2 was delayed by a couple months. Well, back then when they initially announced it, right when they're close to launch, there was no date, and we were really in the cusp of COVID stuff. Actually shipping or production was going to be hard for getting the game onto disc. And so we didn't have a new date, and man, that one was tough. But even then it was still like, okay, well, we'll figure it out. We'll get there when we get there. But that was maybe the biggest one for me personally, where it's like, I'm just depressed walking around town now.
I remember that one because that was the one, right, where they delayed it and then they didn't give a date, but it ended up not being actually delayed that much. They just kind of scared you by not saying anything. And then it actually ended up like, oh, that's not that bad. So I remember having the same reaction, because I mean, who wasn't excited for Last of Us 2 at that time? that was interesting, but I'm glad it turned out. And I feel like that'd be the same situation here if it's delayed, but we'll probably find out tomorrow, right, when all the big sites get their news.
Yeah, I think so for sure. By tomorrow, we'll at least see that squashed or confirmed tomorrow. But so moving on to another game that has been delayed a couple times. We have a set date now, apparently. So we got Ghostwire Tokyo from Tango Gameworks coming out March 25th, 2022. This game, we got a pretty big deep dive with State of Play recently, where they spent a good half hour talking about the game and the most amount of info I've seen in this game since they initially revealed it. So is this on your radar? How do you feel about Ghostwire Tokyo?
Oh, it's on the radar for sure. I mean, it's going to be one of those like, hey, wait and see the reviews, right? Because it could go a few different ways.
Yeah.
But I mean, the game looks cool. I really like the way this type of like cyberpunk type of visual style is coming back. I like the way it's a lot of samurais going on. You know, like I wear a samurai armor in Elden Ring. I got the Tsushima stuff going on. It's a really cool aesthetic. And I think that's what stuck out to me most in that trailer, was like all those animations where they have like those magical threads coming off the fingers and like all those abilities. Like it looks super, super cool. The game to me reminds me kind of what I felt like playing, or judging by what it looks like in the trailers, it kind of looks like that Dishonored style of, you know, customizable abilities, and you're sneaking around. Do you want to stealth? Do you want to fight? I think it looks more action focused than that, though. But I mean, it looks like a lot of fun. I know Katie's really excited to play it over on our show. She'll be talking about it for sure. And I mean, if it ends up being as cool as it looks, I will be too, because it looks like a lot of fun. And who can forget that original reveal at E3 with I forget what her name is, but
I forget
that
her name
woman,
too, but she was
everyone's
just bubbling,
favorite
full
woman.
Life.
She's not even with the team anymore that's making the game, but I'll never forget that presentation. And I've never forgot Ghostwire's name ever since that either.
Yeah, that's, I think a lot of pre-orders were locked right in just there
totally,
with how awesome
totally.
That was. But yeah, and I'm this art style really does it for me, where it's a cyberpunk kind of style with like, but also juxtaposed within these like horrible monsters and like really grotesque looking supernatural stuff. I think just a great idea to merge those two together. I never played, so the other games from this from Tango is the Evil Within, and people love that series. Never really played it, but that gives me hope that at least the action is enough to kind of keep you going in. I don't know how open the worlds will be. I know there is some kind of traversal. You'll see the main character kind of jumping onto buildings or teleporting up with that wire thing, so you can do that somewhat. But I wonder if if you have that Dishonored kind of playstyle where you can go stealthy, go around or sneak, but very curious. But I think you're right. Looking at reviews, that's kind of going to be the tipping point.
Yeah, it looks like that. I think to me, it's going to come down to a lot about what they do say about the traversal and sort of those movement options. I think that's one thing I've realized is like, if I'm going to play an open world game, and I assume this game is going to have, you know, a reasonable size map, it really comes down to, is it fun to move around? Because if I'm going to be exploring somewhere that's this big place and there's, you know, tons of places to visit, like I need to move around quick. That's the reason why Spider-Man works so well. You know, the open yeah. world is relatively small and you can move around really quick. And so if it's fun to parkour around, you're fighting guys, you know, you're in this cool city, your abilities look dope as hell. I mean, this game looks like it's going to be a hit. And it's a Bethesda game too. So, I mean, you know, it's going to get that marketing push, you know, people are going to be talking about it. It seems like it's going to be a big hit. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's, you know, around some of the game of the year talk. I mean, I don't know how successful it'll be with, you know, some of the stuff that's already come out and probably will come out later in the year, but it'll be, I think it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, no, that's interesting to point out what we're kind of expecting at the end of the year. We have the big juggernaut that's maybe going to get delayed. Who knows? It's already been kind of moved around. But we have God of War Ragnarok. It's set for 2022. That's all we have right now is the date. But we did get that full-blown gameplay trailer a couple months ago at that State of Play. Do you have hopes that we're going to actually get our hands on it this year?
Got hopes, man. You got to hope, right? I mean... It's one of those things. I feel like the prevalent internet opinion is that it's going to be delayed. And I feel like whenever games have sort of that late year sort of release date, it's always a question of if it's going to happen or not. Because like we're just talking about with this potential Forspoken delay, like, you know, a 1 month delay is not a big deal, but a 1 month delay at the end of the year means it's coming out next year. So it could change a lot for God of War. I don't think God of War is the kind of game that they want to release with any problems either. Like, to me, it's like, that's the king of PlayStation right now is God of War. So I think you want to, similar to like Halo Infinite, you don't want to release it in a bad spot and get bad press and, you know, kind of ruin that whole image of the franchise right now, because a lot of people are like, God of War 2018 is like the best game ever. A lot of people are, you know, have that kind of opinion. So I hope it hits, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was delayed. If it's delayed though, I feel like it wouldn't be beyond, you know, this time next year. So I don't think we'll be waiting too long, and man, it can't come soon enough. I hope this is one of those weird times where they're like, nope, this is for sure coming out and you can pre-order it now. And, you know, just guarantee that for me as soon as you can, because I can't wait. Like that's going to be such an experience when we finally get to play it.
Now I've had this thought recently where playing Horizon Forbidden West and then seeing the high accolades that Gran Turismo 7 has gotten, you have really high potential what's come in this year with Forspoken, Ghostwire Tokyo, got you know, looking at God of War as one of those games. There's been so much great stuff for PS5, PS4 this year. I don't know is it weird to have all these games kind of pushed into 1 year? Maybe you kind of spread it out a little bit, because I feel like if we didn't have God of War this year, we'd still have a lot to play for, like, first party or at least exclusive PlayStation experiences on PS4, PS5, where I'm not also mad if we have God of War next year.
No, I mean, I wouldn't be mad either. And like you said before, there's always so much to play, right? There's just endless, endless stuff. And so, I mean, I wouldn't be upset about it either, honestly. And they have enough teams over there. There's got to be one or two things unannounced that they're working on. You know, they've bought a few studios recently as well. I think FireSprite was the one you mentioned before, but there was a few other studios as well that they've kind of said they're working along with. So even if God of War is delayed, I'm sure they'll have something else to show, whatever that ends up being. Right. We'll have to wait and see, but I mean, there's always so much announced at E3 that's going to be coming out. And it's just, I think at this point in the year, anything could happen. But I think the plan is to get God of War out by the end of this year, though. Like, they wouldn't say it if it wasn't. And I think that the second you announce a release date or like a window for a game of that type of magnitude, it instantly becomes negative press if you delay it, even if it's for a good reason. And so I think that you got to be reasonably confident, and I hope they are.
Yeah, and I think it's a lot easier to digest with the 2022 date. I flash back to when we initially got that PS5 reveal, and it was a State of Play, and we got that God of War logo for Ragnarok, and they had that 2021 release date. I remember even then going, no, there's no way we're getting 2021.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so it was just a race of time. It's like, when are they going to finally announce it's not this year? And then we finally get 2022. Okay, that makes way more sense development time-wise. And so I think you're right. I do lean on the fact that we're probably going to get it this year. I wonder if we need it because there's so many awesome games, and I can't believe I'm even saying we don't need it this year because I can't wait to play this game. But I am confident 2022 makes more sense, especially if they push it all the way to the holiday season. You got plenty of time, if not early 2023, and we're still playing awesome games at that time. So not the end of the world.
Exactly. And either way, at the end of the day, whether it's, you know, two months difference, it's going to be like a game of the year contender. You hope it's going to be a great game, everything you want from the sequel of 2018. I mean, you hope it's not a letdown, right? And we say that about PlayStation all the time. They're going to miss one time. Like they can't, not every game can be like 85 plus on Metacritic or whatever it ends up being. So you just hope, I hope I didn't jinx it there. I'm going to knock on some wood right now. Yeah, I don't know why I even said that now. That was a terrible idea. But I think it's going to come out. I don't have too much worry, whether it's now or like by this time next year. If it was delayed beyond that, I feel like that's when I'd be like, wow, did something go wrong with this? You know, was there, you know, some internal politics or something happened, because that would be pretty significant at that point. But I mean, I don't think we're going to have to worry about something like that.
No, I think, and you mentioned before where this is now their biggest darling with Sony Santa Monica. And really whenever Naughty Dog is kind of out of the mix because they're working on stuff behind the scenes on whatever their next project is, because they don't have their next game in play, at least publicly, it's all, you know, eyes on Sony Santa Monica. And we now see what God of War looks like. I think Sony would give them whatever resources, whatever time they initially need, because that hasn't come out of the gate polished as hell and at that same caliber that we've known for the last God of War 2018. So I think they, you know, they're not pushed at all. So if they have to delay it, they will. But I think they'll stick with that time.
Yeah, you know, exactly. I mean, you hit the nail on the head for sure, especially with God of War. And I think they've got enough manpower and other studios. I think they've even got some of those new studios sort of supporting, and I know a lot of companies outsource like a lot of the work too. So I'm sure they're doing everything they can to hit what their goal is with the end of the year.
Yep. Same here. All right, James, we'll kind of end the podcast there. It's been a good amount of time here. Don't want to keep you on the line too long, but where can they, first of all, I appreciate once again, you dealt with the power outage. We're still stuck on here. Where can they keep up with you online?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you can find our show over at CNS Pod over on Twitter, which is the easiest way to find us. We got all our links and stuff over there for our show. And of course, we have episodes every Monday comes out. We talk about PlayStation. We talk about games we're playing, the news, a lot of different stuff. We also do an extra show every once in a while. We actually just did an episode creating a tier list of all the different characters on Lost. So that was a lot of fun. I don't know why we did that, honestly, kind of random. We just kind of, you know, tossed the idea around one day and we did it. So we do quirky stuff like that sometimes. But yeah, it's mostly PlayStation video game stuff. And again, at CNS Pod on Twitter. You can find me also if you want to. The link's there as well. But I'm at Jackpot. It's JAKKP0T because someone else took the one with the O and is no longer active on Twitter. So I can't even get it back. It's just the way it is. On Xbox, I have like the zero at the end of the name and it just completely ruins it, man. But what do you do, right? What do you do?
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for having me on. It's been a blast, and happy to come back whenever. Happy to have you on our show, and it's been fun.
You got to say the word 100%. Appreciate you being here. We'll end it there for the week, and I'll keep on the line for a second, James. But keep up the show as well on Twitter @PlastiCarPod. That's it for this time. We'll see you next time. Bye bye.